All right, welcome back to the program. So take this quote from Doug Armstrong, general manager of the St. Louis Blues, as you see fit. It's sort of brilliantly vague. This from St. Louis Media Avail today. We've already talked about, you know, Braden Shen and Doug Armstrong saying that they want to bring back David Perron. This is Doug Armstrong, Jeremy Rutherford tweeting, on whether Vlad Tarasenko will be on the Blues roster next season. Here's a quote from Doug Armstrong. Quote, I'm not concerned about Vladdy for next year at all. So does that mean he'll be on the team, or will the team honor his trade request? Interesting times in St. Louis right now. Always interesting times with the defending two-time Stanley Cup champion. Looking for the third in a row, they are the Tampa Bay Lightning. And pleased to be joined by Brian Engblom, who has covered this team for a number of years, Lightning TV analyst, and he joins me now. Brian, how are you today?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for joining me today. So the Rangers are the next opponents, as we all know now, for the Tampa Bay Lightning Eastern Conference Final. The whole thing is going to be probably positioned as, you know, the battle of the two best netminders in the world, Andrei Vasilevskiy versus Igor Shesterkin. Is that the main storyline for you, or is there something else that intrigues you about this one, Brian?
That's right in there for sure. It's too, you know, it's hard to resist that because the season Shesterkin's had and everybody's talking about him, Vasi, you know, winning the Vezina in the past and more importantly, the last two cups. So yeah, goaltending, you don't go anywhere without it. So that would be front and center. I would say that the two teams have some similarities. Certainly the way they're built. You've got Panarin, who's kind of the mirror image of Kucherov. You've got some terrific young talent on the Rangers. The Lightning don't have a current 50-goal scorer like Kreider, but they have a former 60-goal scorer who's still pretty good at hitting the net, like Stammer. Their defense has, you know, some great talent. Their big three or four are really good and solid, and you could say the same thing for the Lightning. So the matchup here is tremendous, I think, all the way around.
You know, I can recall, because I watched your career, Brian, in the early 80s when you're playing with the Caps. You were paired with Scott Stevens, who was, as we know, one of the most feared hitters the game has ever seen. And right now, and maybe it's just because nobody really does it anymore, or it happens so seldom, and we saw it again last night with Trouba catching Seth Jarvis. I mean, Jacob Trouba brings an element to that Rangers blue line that, you know, not a lot of teams have. Like, that's one of those, you know, you got to be heads up when Trouba's on the ice. And listen, these hits are, you know, by and large all clean, and they're all devastating as well. What goes through your mind, you know, as someone who played, again, like someone who played and was paired with Scott Stevens, what do you see when you watch Jacob Trouba play?
First of all, yeah, playing with Scott was great. When he was 18 years old, he was my partner. Yeah, and I thought he was going to kill me a couple of times. But he was fantastic at it, of course. You know what goes through my mind is, excuse me, how fortunate the forwards in this league really are now, because there is virtually no hitting. Yeah, you're right. Trouba is one of the few guys that can do it. And every once in a while, like a hit like this, I thought it was a great hit. There was nothing wrong with it. And they're so few and far between. There is zero fear for forwards coming in the offensive zone and crisscrossing and dipping and diving and do whatever they want. Boy, must be fun. I know I've talked to some of the forwards from my generation and even slightly after that who would love to have played now, because if you did that back then, you're in the hospital. It wasn't just Scott Stevens, and he's a great example. There are lots of others. Danny Potvin be another one. You'd be in the hospital. Next thing you'd see is a ceiling. So that's almost been completely taken away. So these guys, especially the young guys, and I think it's one of the reasons that scoring is up so much, they come in, they're all been, you know, schooled since they were 9 or 10 years old. They have great skill, great speed, and they have no fear coming in making plays at the offensive blue line and diving across and making, you know, you can drop your head. A lot of guys have their head down because they can. And I think that's a big reason, one of the many, that scoring has been up this year. So when you do have a Trouba, you better know when the guy is out there. There are still some guys around the league, whether it's along the wall or whatever. You better know who you're playing against. And that, to me, has become a thing where a lot of players in today's game don't pay enough attention, and then everybody's startled when a big hit happens because you didn't realize the guy was there. That's just not paying attention, and it's really dangerous.
You're still allowed to hit. You know, I keep going back to this, like, because this is still, you know, it's not even a contact sport. It's a collision sport now more so than ever. Let me ask you about a couple of guys from this Tampa Bay roster that really fascinate me. And one of them is Andre Palat. I've always liked Palat. Watched him in junior in the Quebec League, liked him. You know, he's sort of, you know, at times he kind of reminds you a little bit of sort of Marian Hossa light in a little bit. Is this, like, are we seeing a maybe like a, because we all know the realities of the salary cap and what it does to teams. Are we watching a swan song here, you think, with Andre Palat and the Tampa Bay Lightning? I mean, he's been there for so much. He's been here for the glory years and the two cups, and now they're going for a third. Are we maybe watching the final season of Andre Palat in Tampa?
It's possible because of the salary cap, and the money he's making. Will he have to maybe take a haircut to stay? I don't know whether he would want to. Andre's a terrific guy and a great player. It's funny you bring up Marian Hossa. That's exactly the guy whose name goes through my mind when I think about Palat. He doesn't score as well as Marian did, but similar dedication to every aspect of the game. And Pally was on the teams in the American League that, you know, Coop coached that. They also won the American League title, too. So he's been a core guy for a really long time. And I don't know because, they've got to sign Paul. And I know they really like him. How could you not? He's been a star for them ever since the trade deadline, never mind the playoffs. So they got to sign him. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but it is possible that Andre Palat may not be around.
You know, one of the players that really starts to stand out here now with the injuries and specifically the injury to Braden Point, we've all known about him before. Actually, you know, today is, now that I think about it, today is the anniversary. On this day in 2015, the Oshawa Generals beat the Kelowna Rockets in the final at the Memorial Cup. It was the last game ever played at the old Colisée in Quebec City, and the overtime hero was Anthony Cirelli. This is a very special day for that 24-year-old hockey player's career. Do you have a thought or two on what Anthony Cirelli has meant to this team? You know, not just with the injury right now to Braden Point, but just in general, how much of a factor Cirelli is for this squad.
I'm glad you brought him up. That's great knowing in that date. He is a terrific player. I absolutely love watching the guy play. He is the epitome of, he has zero left in the tank at the end of every game. Doesn't matter if it's November or the end of May. He's always going 100 miles an hour. His will to win every shift is outstanding. I think he drives other players on his team to another level. I know he drives the opposing defenseman nuts because he's the epitome of a dog on a bone for sure. He does not give up. Doesn't matter how many skills you have, how fast you are. And the underrated thing about Anthony Cirelli over the last 2 years, Barb Underhill has been, you know, the power skating coach here for years. And he has been one of her subjects over the last several years. He has improved his skating from his first year in the league, like you read about. I've told Barb a couple of times that, you know, she's first star at the beginning of the season each year because even Braden Point, he actually improved even Braden. But Sorelli's skating is underrated. He is unreal fast. And you put that together with his tenacity. He's got some really good hands, terrific mind for the game. You can put him on the power plays, an outstanding penalty killer. And, of course, you can match him up against anybody with speed or with size, and you're doing just fine.
A further note on that, and we'll see him in action tonight, Leon Draisaitl was on that Kelowna Rockets team that lost to Cirelli's Oshawa Generals. And Cirelli goes down in history, Brian, as the last player ever to score at the Colisée. It's such a fascinating little stat, and it's so great. You know, the interesting thing about Cirelli, too, is you know, growing up, like, I don't think he played AAA hockey until his minor midget draft year. Like, he was always like a single A, double A player, was just like playing with his buddies, just like having fun. Like, he's kind of one of those kids that you point to and you say, look, your son or daughter doesn't have to play AAA hockey all the way up. Look at Anthony Cirelli. Like, I don't think he played AAA until his draft year for the OHL, Brian.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have heard people talk about that. I don't know all the details myself. But, yeah, that probably explains, you know, the fact that he was overlooked and maybe he was a little bit, you know, later developing. It explains why he plays the way he plays.
He's such a good player. This is going to be a fascinating series here. You know, you mentioned a player like Nick Paul, trade deadline acquisition. You know, you throw in Brandon Hagel, who's another one. We all knew what the Yanni Gourde line meant to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now they'll face off against a team that has Barkley Gaudreau, who meant so much to this Tampa Bay Lightning team as well in their Stanley Cup runs. You throw Corey Perry into that mix as well. We can read a lot into, you know, how Julien Brisebois feels a roster needs to be constructed. Like, at the beginning of this season, how much in this organization's mind was, we need to do something to recreate what we had with the Yanni Gourde line, no matter how we end up doing it?
Yes, that's true. It's a big loss, losing that Yanni Gourde line for sure. But it's funny, you know, it's semantics. I get it, Jeff. But when you start talking about recreating, you're in trouble already. You have to leave the past. You have to leave the past in the past. If you're a team that's repeating, I remember that from years ago. The last year was last year. If you try to recreate in a player's mind, how did we feel last year? How did I feel? What was it like here? You're in big trouble already because you're not dealing with what's in front of you. So it's always good to have new blood. And in today's game with the salary cap, it's an absolute necessity. And the Lightning have been the epitome of it. It's not like they're the only ones. Chicago had to go through it. The Kings, you know, on and on and on over the last several years. But so you do have to develop a little bit of a different personality. And I think this team has a little bit different personality. And I think they showed that in the first two rounds against Toronto and Florida. And I think that's a really healthy thing. They don't, if you remember the last 2 years, Kucherov played mostly with Braden Point. He has not, and I know Pointer's hurt, but when Pointer was still in the lineup in Toronto, he wasn't playing with Kuch really. It's been Cooch and Stammer together for the last many weeks. You don't see Chernak and McDonough together all the time, the way they were, it seemed like, all the time the prior 2 years. I think that's really healthy. You create a different feel, make the players think differently and feel differently, especially when you're trying to repeat from 1 year to the next and the next.
Let me close here, Brian, by talking about Victor Hedman. One of my favorite players in the league. Just such a delight. So successful, so strong. I know he loves a challenge. I can recall, as I'm sure you can as well, that game this year against the Los Angeles Kings when Tampa was going into the game with four defensemen and Hedman was like, okay, this is the challenge. I can't wait for this game. I'm out there for more than half the game. This is going to be great. And it was one of the best, you know, blue line performances we've seen all season long. There will be defensemen that'll have better individual seasons. Adam Fox last year, you know, this year, Roman Josi, Cale Makar had great seasons. But if I'm asked who I think the best defenseman is in the NHL, period, my answer is always Victor Hedman. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would have to agree. I have the pleasure of watching him every game. So I can see all the nuances, you know, from game to game, on top of all the great plays. And there are so many of them. Victor plays his own style because he can. He's 6'6", and he can skate like the wind. He's in phenomenal condition, and he can skate with the best of them in the league. And that allows him to take chances offensively, standing in at the offensive blue line, maybe gambling a little bit more than, you know, the coaching staff would like. I know there's many times I go, I'm watching again, I'm going, Victor, no. Oh, great play, Victor. Well done. You know, that's the kind of player he is. You know, he'll swoop across from his left side as the opposition is coming out of their end. He'll swoop across to his partner's side and blow their play up before they even get to the red line. And you can see the look on the left winger's face like, where the hell did he come from? Like he swallows you up in the last 15 to 20 feet, and you go, how did he do that? He just has that thing about him. His sense of the game and his sense of his own skill are nobody's better at that in the league. Nobody. I'm forward, defenseman, anybody. His sense of what he has to do and what he can do according to his skill in the league is second to none. And so that's an important factor. And so Victor doesn't play defense in the classical way that maybe Ryan McDonagh does. Skating forwards up, backwards back, classic. McDonagh reminds me of Serge Savard so much. So you've got Hedman, who's all over the place, probably skating 75 to 80% of his game forward. And you wouldn't want to do it any other way. You wouldn't want to train him a different way because you don't turn a thoroughbred into a plow horse. And so you just let Victor do what he does. It can be more difficult to play with him, and that's why you see different combinations. And people say all the time to me, Jan Rutta plays with Victor Hedman. How does that happen? Because Jan is smart enough to know what's coming at him, but also to keep an eye on Victor to see what Victor's doing. Because you have to let Victor Hedman be Victor Hedman, and then sometimes you got to swing your butt over on the other side because he just left his, and then you figure it out from there. So it can cause some issues, but at the same time, you wouldn't ever want to change it.
Such an elite player, and nobody makes a better long bomb, tape-to-tape pass than Victor Hedman. Brian, this has been great. Looking forward to this series for a number of reasons. It's the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. It all gets underway tomorrow. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. Enjoy the next round.
Thanks. You too, Jeff. Be well.
He's Brian Engblom, someone who made his debut in the NHL in the playoffs. Had his name on the Stanley Cup before playing a regular season game. Interesting. Hour two coming up next.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Game one tonight, Colorado Avalanche, Edmonton Oilers, Western Conference Final. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Jeff Merrick Hockey Show. Glad to have you aboard today. And I'm very pleased to welcome aboard Mark Mosier, Avalanche TV play-by-play voice. Mark, how are you today?
Doing good, Jeff. Good to be on with you again. Thanks.
Pleasure is all mine. This is going to be a lot of fun. I don't know even where to begin. I mean, a lot from the Edmonton side is going to revolve around Connor McDavid. I know the default is always, okay, that's Connor McDavid, so you look for the complementary center on the other side, and that's Nathan MacKinnon. But, you know, if we're looking for the game within the game, I can't help but thinking here, Mark, I'm not sure this will be so much McDavid versus MacKinnon as much as it's going to be McDavid versus Makar. Agree or disagree?
I think there's a certain element to that. Yeah. I mean, Cale Makar, in terms of uniqueness, you know, he's one of the most unique guys in the league right now. You know, and he coming from the back end, he's just so talented, and his game is growing so much all the time. And the way he skates, and I guess I would argue that he skates more like McDavid than MacKinnon does. I mean, MacKinnon's more of a, you know, he's just more of a, you hear him coming down the ice, whereas McDavid looks like he's, you know, he's floating on you know, cushions, that kind of thing, and on clouds. But, you know, to me, honestly, Jeff, I look at it, it's going to be Oilers versus Avs and vice versa. And there, you know, other storylines will come out, you know, Dreisaitls and Rantanens and Canes and Landeskogs and so on. But, you know, I just the stories are writing themselves, so I just feel like until they don't do it, it's going to be 97 and 29, you know, the main focal points for all the networks and perhaps for both fan bases as well.
You know, let me drill down here a little bit more on Nathan MacKinnon. And the one thing that I've always said about him, and this goes back to his days playing with the Halifax and the Mooseheads, is, you know, he's the closest thing that I've seen to a rhinoceros playing hockey. The way that he skates, how powerful he is, the way that when he gets a full head of steam, you know, guys just bounce off of him. Every time I see him going hard to the net, it is frightening. I do understand, you know, your point about how the skating styles are completely different, Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon. To me, Nathan MacKinnon is all about power and all about force as well. And it is really fascinating when Elliot Knight spoke to him at the Players Tour in Chicago before the season. And, you know, we brought up things that he'd done and things that, and he stopped us mid-sentence and said, look, I've done nothing. I've achieved nothing. And he went, you know, defers to Sidney Crosby. Look what Crosby's done and all the, you know, team success, personal success. I find it fascinating that at times someone we consider one of, if not the best player in the world, and at times Nathan MacKinnon is that guy. In his mind, Mark, he's achieved nothing. He hasn't done a thing, and that's what he uses as fuel.
Okay. All things being equal, I know McDavid, you know, he's got more points and so on, but both are great skaters in with the way I always say. I always say McDavid skates like the ice is his best friend, and MacKinnon treats the ice like it stole his lunch money. You know, that's just the way I look at it to compare their skating styles. But you know, Jeff, let's start thinking about the intangibles here. And I know that everybody wants to win. I mean, everybody wants to win. Everybody loves winning. Winning is fun. But you know, how far do you go to win? You know, how far does that desire that's deep down inside of you, how far does it propel you in the intangible category? And listen, what I've seen out of Connor McDavid in this postseason so far tells me this guy desperately wants to win. But I know that Nathan MacKinnon does. I know there is a seriousness about him right now. There is a focus about him that I guess I've seen before, but I've never seen it exactly like this. And I've never seen it perhaps more burning with intensity than you're seeing out of 29 right now. I mean, he's completely dialed in, completely focused in, and he wants it badly. So, again, when you get into the third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, Jeff, I don't know how much intangibles come into play other than it's just you survive the war of attrition. But if they do, the Oilers may want it as bad as the Avalanche. McDavid may want it as bad as MacKinnon, but I can promise you they don't want it more.
Mm-hmm. Let me paraphrase something that Jared Bednar said. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, so I'm going to sort of freestyle this, and I'll try to more capture his spirit than anything else. When Bednar was asked about making it past the second round, he says something along the lines of, you know, we're focused on winning the Stanley Cup, not winning the second round. That has always been a hurdle for the Avalanche. We know that all too well, and we saw it last year against the Vegas Golden Knights. How much did the second round win mean to this team, or is it just another round of the playoffs? They're focused on the Stanley Cup.
I think for perhaps 45 minutes after the game, you know, maybe an hour after the game, maybe a little bit longer. Yeah, it was important because more than anything, I don't think they were necessarily worried about the round that they lost in, as opposed to, man, we lost again. We lost to this team, and before we had lost to that team. And there were extenuating circumstances in the previous years, the Nashville series, the Shark series, and then the in the bubble against Dallas. A lot of injuries, a lot of things that were beyond control. But last year was the real, real bad one. That was the one that really hurt this team. And, you know, I think these guys don't want to live with that kind of regret anymore. And so I don't know if necessarily it's the round, but it's the losing part of it. But I think because you're asked about it so much, because it's talked about so much, and because the history is right there and the facts are staring you in the face, I don't think you can get away from that. And I don't think that you can ignore that, whether it's consciously or subconsciously that, whew, we got by that second round. Now it's all systems go. But that's what it feels like right now. That now you enjoy. Honestly, Jeff, I think they enjoyed it for maybe that night. You know, maybe on the plane flight home. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the guys are feeling pretty good about it. But the focus is now on the ultimate goal, which is where it's been in previous years. They just got knocked out, you know. But I think this team, more than any other previous team in the past 4 or 5 years, this team is built for this moment. And talking to the guys, I know they're embracing it, and I know they're again completely serious and focused on what is straight ahead for them. You know, some guys haven't even been there before. The core group, the core leadership of this team has never been this far, so it's a little bit of a new territory for them. But I also think that they look at it as a huge opportunity that they do not want to let go.
Okay, so take us into the mind here of Jaron Bednar. Now, as a hockey fan, I want to see Connor McDavid's line up against Nathan MacKinnon's line, but I'm not the coach of the Colorado Avalanche. If you're the coach of the Colorado Avalanche here, do you want to see McDavid's line against Nathan MacKinnon's line, or do you want to see it against a line that has Nazem Kadri and perhaps more specifically Valeri Nichushkin, who'll get some Selke Trophy consideration at the end of the season here?
Yeah, and he should, because he's been so good defensively this year, Jeff. I mean, it's been impressive. But this is a very tricky and difficult question for me to answer, because one thing Jaron Bednar has never, ever done, he's never, ever shied away about his line playing against the other team's top line. And you look back at the last series against the Blues, Berube was the same way. He said, oh, yeah, you want to put MacKinnon out against O'Reilly? We'll last change O'Reilly against MacKinnon all the time. I mean, both coaches were fearless in that regard, and I think he trusts his top line. But the tricky part about it is, I know that in the past, that Nazem Kadri, you know, he's played pretty decently against Connor McDavid, you know. And again, I think if you're talking about 91's line, Kadri's line, it's about, okay, well, who is he out there with? Will he be out there with Lekkonen and Nichushkin? And the Avs reunite the top line with Landeskog and Rantanen with MacKinnon. You know, will Burakovsky be up there? You know, who are the line mates for, or who's the right winger specifically, I guess, for the Kadri line, before I can answer which one would match up better. But Jaron Bednar has always been not afraid at all and has made no bones about it. You know what? I'll throw my top line out against your top line any night of the week. And I'm talking about all the top lines across the National Hockey League. It just so happens to be on a gigantic stage right now. And watching what McDavid's line has done this postseason, Jeff, I don't know about you, but I'm just blown away by the production. I simply cannot believe how awesome they've been.
Being joined by Mark Mosier, TV play-by-play voice of the Colorado Avalanche. Tonight, it is game one between the Avs and the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know how much more we can talk about Cale Makar, but here we go again. If there's anyone in this league that we look at and say, okay, there's one player that can skate with Connor McDavid, there's someone who has elite footwork like Connor McDavid, it's probably Cale Makar. Safe to say that regardless of what Bednar wants to do up front up against Connor McDavid, 97 is going to get fed a steady diet of Cale Makar and Devon Taves.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. And what these guys can do as well is they can go, I mean, easily 25, 30 minutes per game and still be incredibly effective at the end of the game. I think that, again, if you're Jay Woodcroft, you're thinking, okay, well, how can I get my guys out against, you know, the second pair or the third pair? But if you're Jaron Bednar, 8 and 7 are going to be out there a lot. And what he's also been doing, depending on where the faceoff is, he may throw Bowen Byram out there with Cale Makar. If the faceoff is in the offensive zone, he likes to throw those guys together a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, because while Makar's production in terms of points went down in round two against the Blues after what it was in round one, 10 points against the National Predators, they've been very good defensively. I mean, that pair has been – I mean, you know what you got in Devon Taves. He is so rock solid, it's almost incomprehensible, and Makar is so dynamic. Very much the perfect partners for each other. And they do a lot of heavy lifting on that back end. So I think you're right on the money. I think that you will see 8 and 7 out there against that McDavid line all the time. I mean, as much as physically possible, that's what I would do, and I'm sure Jaron Bednar is thinking the same thing.
Let me ask you about Darcy Kuemper here, because to me the goaltending matchup here is a really interesting one. I've made this point the last couple of days that in the previous round, the Battle of Alberta, Mike Smith had to outduel a player that Edmonton tried to bring in to take his job in Jacob Markstrom. It was a couple hours before the free agent window opened when Markstrom said, "I'm choosing Calgary over Edmonton." Okay. You know, we know that Edmonton was having discussions with Arizona about Darcy Kuemper. The Avalanche offer was better. He ends up a member of the Avalanche. And now Darcy Kuemper faces off against Mike Smith. And Mike Smith looks down the rink and sees someone else that the organization was looking at to take his spot. How do you see the goalie matchup in this one?
Well, I'm sure there's a ton of pride for Mike Smith. I mean, I can understand. What am I, the third choice here? Am I, you know, but he's done his job. I look at Darcy Kuemper, though, and I go by numbers in the regular season, Jeff, but I also go by what I've seen even so far this playoffs. And that's not to say that Darcy has been great, because I don't think he has been. I think he's been good. But I believe going into game one, the Avs have the better goalie right this second. You know, that's what I feel. I feel like right this very second, you and I talking at 11:13 Mountain Time, 1:13 Eastern Time, they've got the guy who has been more consistent in the postseason. That's not to say that Mike Smith isn't going to come on out and throw a zero or a one or who knows what at any point in this series. But I like Darcy Kuemper right now. And I think that he is also part of that second-round group that, okay, we're getting into places we haven't been before. But once you get through that and you beat a very good Blues team the way you did, I think you can only grow in confidence from that point on. And that's the way I look at it. He, again, the first couple of months of the season, not great, but good enough. And then January 1 hits, and Darcy Kuemper just turns it on. It becomes really, really good for this team. But here's what I do know. I know the guys in front of him very much feel good about his game. In fact, Jared Bednar even intimated that during the Blues series. I think it was right before Game 6 that, you know, Darcy, we fully believe as a unit that he can steal a game for us, that he can single-handedly win a game. He'll probably have to here at some point because, you know, there's so much firepower on both sides of the puck here. But they truly believe that out of Darcy Kuemper. You know, if the Avs were going up against one of the teams in the East, I wouldn't be saying this. But I've seen Mike Smith, and I know that he can be an emotional goalie. And when he's hot, he's hot. And when he's not, he can be not. So we'll see how it plays out in this series.
We know all about the headline makers, MacKinnon and Makar and Landeskog and Kadri and Rantanen. Let me conclude by asking you about a couple of the more down-ballot players here. Like, I'm a big fan of JT Compher. For those in the, well, more specifically in the East than the West, and this program goes coast to coast in Canada, who else should we know about on this Avalanche team that aren't in the top six or aren't the top pair, you know, Taves and Makar here? Who should more casual hockey fans be aware of before this game tonight?
Well, I'll say this. You know, two-thirds of the fourth line accounted for the game-winning goal against the St. Louis Blues, which I thought was very interesting. Jared Bednar had Darren Helm and Logan O'Connor out there, and they had Gabe Landeskog out there in the final 30 seconds of that game. And Makar and Eric Johnson were out there as a pair together, which I thought was very interesting. And the fourth line, I don't know that they're going to produce a lot, Jeff, but they had a tremendous series against the Blues. To me, they were always noticeable, always effective. I think they won the battle against their opposite line every night. That's the way I look at it. I don't know if they're going to be wildly productive, but here's what you got back there. You got Cogliano, who's got a ton of playoff games. I talked to Darren Helm this morning. He's a cup champion, so he's been through all of this. If it comes down to the guys down the lineup, then, you know, I just think that every line has to win its own battle every single night. And we'll get back to one other guy, Andrei Burakovsky, who has had tremendous postseason success with the Washington Capitals. He's been good for the Avs in the postseason before. Didn't have a good second-round series. Didn't even have a really good first-round series. He's been kicked down the lineup a little bit with the Lehkonen moving up as an elevator guy to the third line. But Burakovsky, I just think he's going to shoot the puck a lot. And he's too good of a shooter to be denied for too much longer. So watch for 95 and watch for the Avs' depth overall in the forward department.
Looks good. Can't wait for this one. It's the Avs and the Oilers tonight, 7:30 Eastern. Pregame puck drops just after 8 o'clock. Hockey Night in Canada and your host, Ron McLean. This has been great, Mark. Looking forward to this one. Let's get at it. And let's hope they give us 7. As a hockey fan, I want 7 of these teams.
Yeah, like, cross our fingers. Selfish guy. As a selfish guy, I'd love to see the Avs, you know, go through in 4. I know that's not going to happen, but this is honestly us down here in Colorado, at least me and people I know, we're as excited for this series, I think, as people in Canada are to watch McDavid and MacKinnon, plus all the rest do their thing. But this is the matchup I think that everybody was looking forward to, and here we go. It's what playoff hockey is all about.
Can't wait. Thanks, as always, for stopping by, pal. You be well.
You got it. Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Mark Mosier, Avalanche TV play-by-play voice, joining me here on the broadcast again tonight. Game 1, Western Conference Final. And that's a final. That's a wrap for the Carolina Hurricanes. They bow out in Game 7 against the New York Rangers. And so the question becomes, what happened and what's next? Here to answer that from the North State Journal is our good friend Corey Lavalette, joins me on the program. Corey, thanks so much for this. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
Good, man. I really appreciate you popping by today. I'm sure the mood is a sour one. I'm sure there's a lot of questions right now around this hockey team. It's a team that had a wonderful regular season, 116 points, you know, tops in the division, some Stanley Cup aspirations. They lose to the Rangers in seven games. Before we get to what's next, how do you evaluate what we saw? So what we saw leading up to this point, both the regular season and the two rounds in the playoffs?
Well, Jeff, I think this is the first time that you can really say that this is a disappointing end to the season. You know, Rod took over and wanted to make this team relevant again, and he's certainly done that. I mean, he's built something special here in Raleigh, but, you know, it felt like this year they should have taken another step forward, and instead it's almost like they took a tiny step back. The regular season was great. You can't discount what they did there. The question is now, can you take another step? You know, I wrote today that, you know, it becomes almost a forgettable season, because you're either memorable because you fail spectacularly or you succeed spectacularly. And this was really neither. It wasn't a crash and burn moment, I don't think. But, you know, like you'd say Tampa had with Columbus a few years ago, but at the same time, you can't be thrilled with the success of the regular season when the playoffs end this way.
So let's just jump to the what's next then, because I'm like many, I think I'm curious about a lot of names here, and you know there are names like Vincent Trocheck and Nino Niederreiter, Max Domi. Those are the unrestricted free agents. We wonder about Martin Natchez in a really bizarre season for him, and certainly bizarre playoff. We wonder about players like Tony DeAngelo as well. I want to park the goaltending conversation for a little bit later on, but of those names, and I guess we should probably throw Ethan Bear into this conversation as well, and he didn't play at all. And when you look at some of the players that I just mentioned, like, who comes to mind right away? What do they do with Niederreiter now? What do they do with Vincent Trocheck, Max Domi? Either of these three players, you think, coming back to the mix in Carolina?
I mean, I would say that the biggest chance is Niederreiter, just because I think, you know, with the way the salary cap is and everything, I don't know that there's a big deal out there to be had for Nino. You know, I don't know that anyone's going to give him 5 years and $6 million or $5 million. You know, he made more than $5 million this year against the cap. He might be best suited, because he really changed who he was this season. I mean, playing with that Jordan Staal line, I mean, I don't think anybody expected Nino to be that good on what was essentially a shutdown line. And he was just had his best NHL season, in my opinion. So do you take that if you're Nino and say, if I sign for 2 years in Carolina, there's still money to be had for me in a couple years when the cap opens back up? And, you know, if he puts together two more years like he did this year, where he can score 20 goals and then be on what I thought was maybe the best shutdown line in the league, you know, he's still going to have value, whether it's here or somewhere else after that. But it's hard to think of teams that are contenders that are going to have the money to pay Nino a lot of money. You know, and I don't know at this point in his career, does he want to go to a rebuilding team or anything like that just to cash in? So that's the guy that jumps out to me that could be back. I think, you know, Trocheck with the Kotkaniemi extension kicking in and him making more money and him needing to be a bigger part of what they do, I think that probably, you know, says that Vinny's not going to be back. The DeAngelo thing is up in the air, because he had a great regular season, kept his nose clean, you know, other than a couple tiny things that were really, if it was anyone else, you wouldn't think twice about it. He was great, you know. I mean, he, you know, the teammates of the team liked him and he played well. And then in the postseason, it's kind of like you talked about him more for what was going on after the whistles and what was going on when the puck was on the ice. And that's not what you need. And then you mentioned Ethan Bear, and I don't know how you, how do you rebuild that relationship a little bit when he watched the whole postseason from the press box and, you know, was behind two guys that are, you know, probably sixes or sevens on good teams. So there's decisions to be made there. He played very, very well with Jacob Slavin. And then, you know, he was one of the first guys to get COVID, got left on the West Coast, and it was never really the same for him after that. So
can you take that and say, you know, that is kind of a weird scenario and he can bounce back from that? Or is there damage done to the relationship as a whole of, you know, can he come back and be part of this team after having to just sit and watch for so long?
Let's, you might as well do it. Let's have the goaltending conversation. It was really tough to watch Antti Raanta last night, the way that he went down, the way that he left the game, and a really tough situation for Peter Kochetkov to come into that one. He comes in two games in a row, one after Raanta gets pulled, the other after he gets injured. We do wonder how close, if at all, Frederik Andersen was to getting into this series, to getting the net. I don't know the answer. I'm not sure, Corey, if you do either. But how do you look at the goaltending situation and how it played itself out this season for the Canes?
Yeah, I got a little bit of conflicting information about just how close Freddie was. Obviously, he's been practicing for a while, but not really in a full kind of backup or starter kind of practice. You know, the practices were short. They were morning skates, things like that. Not a ton of action. You know, I heard from some places that he wasn't close at all, and other places that maybe, you know, Rod was very vague. You know, every day he practices, he's getting quote-unquote closer, but what does that mean? The goaltending overall, I mean, you exit this season and you think, wow, we've got three guys that are NHL goalies, without a doubt. You know, they had three guys who were NHL goalies last year, too. So you got to be happy with that, and maybe you have a little more confidence in Raanta being a 2A kind of guy and playing more games than he did in the regular season after what he did in the postseason, because it's too bad that this ended the way it did for him, because, you know, outside of those last two games, he was really spectacular. You know,
he was the guy that was
so good in Arizona a couple years ago, and that's, you know, there were a lot of people saying, you know, oh, you need to start Kochetkov or you need to get Freddie back. And I was just kind of like, you really can't ask for a whole lot more than what Antti Raanta did in this postseason. He was great. And so, you know, each of those guys has a year left. You know, I think they see Kochetkov as the goalie of the future, but there's some rough edges there that need to be polished out. And not a lot of guys go from playing a handful of AHL games to becoming good NHLers. So a season in the AHL isn't a bad thing. And he's back to Chicago now, and that team has a really good chance at a Calder Cup this year. Maybe he jumps right in net there and becomes the guy there, and he can build off that.
Yes, he got sent down. LaFontaine got sent down as well. And yeah, like, Chicago's in the mix. They're one of the final four teams remaining. So they've got, you know, as much chance as anybody else. You know, one of the other players, and this was, you know, like, we all had a lot of fun with the offer sheet situation between Carolina and Montreal in the off season, and, you know, the social media work that Carolina did. Like, it was, like, from our seats, just as viewers, it was really entertaining watching the whole thing play itself out. But then at the end of the day, the players got to play. It wasn't the best of all possible seasons for Jesperi Kotkaniemi with the Carolina Hurricanes. They've made a significant financial contribution to his bank account. 8-year contract, $4.8 million is the AAV. This is after, you know, the 1-year offer sheet to get him over in the first place. So the commitment is there from the Carolina Hurricanes' point of view. How do you feel about their ROI, their return on investment after year one?
Yeah, I mean, this is what you have to do to make an offer sheet work, right? The one that Montreal did on Aho was kind of a head scratcher, and you know, they never really had a chance to get him. Now the Hurricanes had to do what they had to do to get a player that they've liked since the draft, you know, of that year. You know, they obviously took Andrei Svechnikov, but they liked the guy who got picked right behind him too. He didn't have a bad season. He only played 12 minutes a game, which, you know, makes you, you know, I think a lot of people would look at that and think, well, maybe the coach doesn't believe in him. They've got him on the fourth line, but he played on the second power play unit. I think there was a lot of rebuilding to Jesperi's game that had to be done. And they tried to start him out on the wing. And I think they learned that he's just one of those guys that to be effective, he has to be in the middle. So then you look at the middle and you've got, you know, Sebastian Aho and Vincent Trocheck and certainly Jordan Staal. And you're like, well, if he's got to play in the middle, who does he play in front of here right now? Now that clears up a little bit, obviously, with us talking about Trocheck and the chances of him coming back. So, you know, I think he steps into a bigger role and you know, Rod doesn't see any line as his second or third line or even his first line, if you were to ask him. But, you know, the Jordan Staal line is going to play their minutes because they're going to have to neutralize whoever's best on the other side. So, you know, I think he moves up into that kind of, you know, 2C, 3C kind of role next season, and we see what steps he takes forward. He had 29 points, which was not as many as he had his rookie year, which was 34. But he scored 12 goals, not playing a lot, and not playing with, you know, guys who are going to make him better necessarily most nights. So, you know, the proof's going to be in the pudding. Like, you know, I mean, like you said, there's a big investment there. But, you know, if anybody can get something out of him, I think it's Rod, because if you watch the way Jesperi plays, he's not that different from Rod Brind'Amour. There's not a lot of flash and dash to him, but there's a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, being in the right place at the right time. And you know, and then there's the skill that maybe gets underrated a little bit.
What do you make of, we'll end on this one. What do you make of Brind'Amour's, you know, wondering about, you know, if they have enough elite level, I'll read the quote here. I think the team is good. It's just, do we have elite goal scorers? Maybe not, but we have great players. I get that coaches are emotional after losses, especially one that's as high profile as this one. It's a game 7 against the New York Rangers. Do you think this is something that, that Don Waddell, GM of the Carolina Hurricanes, pursues in the offseason? We need to get some more goals in here ASAP.
I think it's something you certainly look at, but the question is, who do you go get? Like, you know, I mean, Sebastian Aho did score 37 goals this year. Now, is he an elite sniper goal scorer? No, that's not how he scores his goals. Could Andrei Svechnikov be that elite goal scorer? You know, you were just talking about Nathan MacKinnon and what an amazing player he is. Well, it took Nathan MacKinnon a little time to become the superstar that he is. And, you know, Andre has those flashes where you watch him and you say, wow, this is the, you know, just like MacKinnon, this is the complete package, power, speed, shooting, passing, everything. Does Andre have another level that he can get to? He just turned 22. It's crazy to think, but,
I know.
So is that the guy that you say, well, if, you know, he scored 30 this year. Yeah, he scored a handful of empty net goals, so people always want to point to that. But, you know, is there another level for him to get to where he becomes a 40-goal guy? And if now he's a 40-goal guy and Aho's a 35 to 40-goal guy and Seth Jarvis becomes a 30-goal guy, well, all of a sudden things don't look so bad on the goal-scoring front. But, yeah, there's definitely, you know, Rod prides himself on this is a by-committee kind of team. And, you know, so Jacob Slavin said last night, you know, our big time players need to be caught big, and maybe they didn't. And I think he's not pointing anyone out. He's talking about himself too. But, you know, those big time players aren't Auston Matthews or Nathan MacKinnon at this point, or Connor McDavid. That's not how this team is. And Rod even said so much. That's not how this team's constructed. And that's okay. That was the end of that quote. You said, he's like, that's okay. Yeah. But then when goals dry up, you don't have that one guy to look to that can, you know, that Auston Matthews who comes into the zone and just scores a goal. It's not there yet. So I think it's something you explore. At the same time, this is not a team that's going to go and dip its toe into the free agent market and overpay for someone. That's just not what they do. You know, that's why Dougie Hamilton's in New Jersey right now.
Say it with me, Corey. Phil Kessel, Hurricane. Say it with me. Phil Kessel, Carolina Hurricanes.
It crossed my mind today. I'm not even going to tell you.
Let me wrap on this one really, really quickly. Got about 30 seconds. Jordan Staal is 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. Such a big part of this Carolina Hurricanes team. Do they do something in the offseason, or do you think they just sort of let the season play itself out and see where they're at?
I think that'll be up to Jordan. You know, it's there's a lot of wear on those tires, right? He's been playing since he was 18, but you know, I don't see him ever going anywhere else just because of, you know, the relationship he has with Rod and the way he's seen this franchise kind of get rebuilt, you know, under his watch a little bit. He went through a lot of tough years here, and to start over somewhere else, I think that seems unlikely to me, but we'll see. You know, I think it, you know, Jordan was, I mean, if you saw the video last night of the post game, Jordan, he didn't even make eye contact with anyone. It's the most disappointed I've seen him at any moment. All those years where we, ended the season talking about who was going to the World Championships was nothing like what he was like what he was like last night. So, yeah, tough one for Jordan, but, you know, nobody worked harder than that guy. You know, he's going to take a couple weeks, decompress, and he's going to come back, and he'll be just as good as he always is.
Yeah, he's a remarkable athlete and a wonderful guy, too. Listen, we'll let you go on that. Corey, thanks so much, as always, for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your expertise and your insight on the Carolina Hurricanes. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Wrapping up, talking about the Carolina Hurricanes with Corey Lavallette from North State Journal. Disappointing season, 116-point regular season, and they lose in Game 7 in the second round. In the homer playoff of all time. Until Game 7 of the second round against the New York Rangers. They advance to face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and now questions around the future of the Carolina Hurricanes. What decisions do they need to make? Which direction is Don Waddell take them in the offseason? Stay tuned. And stay tuned for our next guest. She's Megan Duggan, former Olympic gold medalist, former world champion, NCAA champion, and she's now the director of player development for the New Jersey Devils, getting a promotion announced today. Megan Duggan joins me in a couple of moments here. The Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. You can join me Monday to Friday at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Jeff Merrick along with you. Thanks as always for stopping by. Megan Duggan is one of the more accomplished and talented hockey players you will hear us talk about here. Olympic gold medalist, multi-time world champion, NCAA champion as well, Clarkson Cup. We throw into that mix and has transitioned into her second hockey career nicely as named today the Director of Player Development for the New Jersey Devils. First of all, Megan, welcome to the program. And secondly, congratulations on the promotion.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. I'm honored to be a part of the discussion today with you. I'm a frequent listener of the your podcast.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. And the topic of discussion is you, so you're uniquely qualified to talk about this. Such a great career you had, and I'm always curious, too, like at what point do you start thinking about, and what point did you start thinking about what your next career was going to be, and was it always going to be hockey? I know going back, you know, years and years when you were a multi-sport athlete, but hockey was always your big thing, like hockey's been your life. Was it always going to be your second career once you transitioned off the ice?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably 99% sure I was going to stay in hockey. I mean, as a young kid, I always dreamed of being in the NHL in some capacity. I think when I was a, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-old kid, I thought I was going to grow up and play for the Bruins one day, being a Boston kid. But, you know, as I got further along in my career, I knew that I still wanted to, once I finished playing, have an impact on the game. And working in the men's professional hockey space was always a goal of mine. So, I would say, yeah, it was something that I, you know, had thought about and knew that I wanted to target upon retiring.
Why New Jersey? Or were they just the first team that approached you post-playing career? Was there something particular about the Devils?
I would say when I think about why New Jersey, my answer would be one, people, and two, purpose. I think, you know, I went through a process when I realized I wanted to get into this and you know, network with a variety of different organizations. And my conversations with, you know, Tom Fitzgerald and Dan McKinnon and Kate Madigan at our organization were just, they felt right. You know, I think we had a really organic, you know, we built a really organic relationship over those first few conversations. And I was as excited, you know, to join the organization as they were to have me. It just felt like the right fit from a people perspective. And then working on the development side in New Jersey, I mean, so exciting. When you think about, you know, some of the young talent that we have and the ability that I would have to impact the organization in that sense and help that talent develop, is just, you know, was a really great purpose to dive right into.
So walk us through what is sort of like what the day-to-day is for someone that that has this on their business card, Director of Player Development. What is the day-to-day for that business card?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best part and what I enjoy most about the role is that the day-to-day is it's so different for me every day. And, you know, I'm in the unique position where I'm a lot, you know, I'm afforded the opportunity to have my hands in a variety of different parts of the organization and learn a lot and grow, you know, have discussions with whether it's different coaching staffs or management, you know, having a dialogue with our pro and amateur scouts and then obviously helping to run the development department. And how we look at each one of our prospects and our young pros through a different lens, and how we create individualized plans to help them, you know, evolve and grow throughout their life cycle to become full-time NHL players for our organization. That's the goal. Give them the resources, give them the feedback, you know, evaluate them in their play and help them throughout this journey to become an NHL player, which we know, everyone knows, you know, there's only so many roster spots and it's not an easy journey. And there's a lot of components that go into that. And so helping to, you know, kind of organize and run our staff with the key focus of assisting our players in all capacities.
So you would also be involved then. I mean, I'm guessing this is, I mean, for lack of a better cliche, from the root to the fruit. So like right from when a kid is drafted until they graduate to the NHL team, you're sort of hands-on all the way up the ladder?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and obviously exciting time with the draft coming up, thinking about, you know, what great new players we'll be able to bring into our development department from the great work that our amateur staff does.
Would you be part of, I'm always curious about this, because one of the things, like I'll be at the Combine later on this week, and I'm always curious whenever we talk to the kids and we talk to them about various teams that they've spoken to, one of the questions we always ask is, you know, what's the weirdest question a team asked you? So Megan, would you be part of putting together the questionnaire, and do you have any sort of in your hip pocket, quote unquote, weird questions you want the kids to answer?
No, I'm not at this point, you know, part of that. Obviously, you know, have participated in a lot of our pre-draft meetings, you know, leading up to some of them leading up to the Combine, and we'll be involved and at the draft in Montreal. But we have such an awesome, you know, amateur staff, whether it's the scouts, you know, the on the psych side and other development aspects. They're a great group that, you know, they will create those questions, and I'm sure, you know, have a good time asking the players and collecting the information that they need. So I'm excited to hear some of the outputs, but no, that's not my area of expertise.
You know, I'm always curious as well, too, you know, the sort of sensitivity moments, like the really, you know, tricky moments where things can either go great or can go south, because drafting a player is one thing. Like, okay, so first you identify, you draft, and then what happens? The decision to go back to junior, to go to Europe, Division One, wherever it is. And then when the athlete turns pro is a really sensitive part of their development as well. When you look at, and maybe I'm missing a whole bunch of steps in there as well, when you look at a player's development from the time that the player is drafted, what are the moments that you think are most sensitive, Megan, or maybe most crucial in a player's development?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just hit the nail on the head. And when you think of the moment you acquire that player and, you know, and then kind of assisting them to when they turn pro and maybe when they make the jump from the American League to the NHL, if that's their path, I think all of that boils down to me, a lot of that to the relationships that you keep with them and with their stakeholders, making sure that, you know, there's a trust factor, you understand where everyone's priorities are, and you build that, you know, that level of rapport with each of them. And you really understand the goals of the players, the goals of their stakeholders, what they want out of their career, right? Every player is so different. And so the way we like to look at it is treating all of them, you know, individually, and dealing with things that they come as they come. And, but really starts with building those strong relationships with the players in order to get through those milestones that you mentioned in an effective way.
Do you feel right now, like this new position that you have as a director of player development for the New Jersey Devils, we've seen a lot of the hires, teams like the Vancouver Canucks have made, and more teams are bringing more women and putting them in prominent decision-making positions within their organization. You know, do you have a thought on, you know, it's taken a long time, and I get it that hockey's usually the last to sort of catch on to you know the ways of the future and how businesses need to grow and develop. But do you have a thought on what's happening with the game now that it's finally, and it's taken so long to finally open the door to realizing that, you know, we're shutting out a large part of the brain trust here that can really help our organization by not having more women in positions of prominence?
Yeah, I mean, I think the door is really starting to open. I think we're scratching the surface. I think this is the beginning, and I'm excited, certainly, to be a part of it. You know, and I'm proud to work in New Jersey, where that's something that we value. And, you know, I think the importance of, as you said, like diversity of thought, diversity of background, diversity of perspective. I mean, in any business or any industry, that leads to success. And so I think bringing more women into organizations, I think it's a winning business proposition. I think that's how you grow your organization and continue to win hockey games. I really do. And so I'm excited to continue to be, you know, kind of moving it forward. I have mentors that I look up to. You mentioned it out in Vancouver, someone like Cami Granato and her role with them this year. And she's someone I've leaned on a lot throughout this process. And she's, you know, helped me kind of come into my own in a role like this. And so I look forward to, you know, continuing to help build out more pipelines, you know, for young women. And hopefully 10 years from now, maybe we're having a different conversation about, you know, what the demographic looks like in different organizations and different positions.
You know, I think that somewhere along the road here, you know, Gina Kingsbury is going to end up with an NHL team when she's ready. The Montreal Canadiens have, you know, already indicated to Marie-Philippe Poulin, when you're ready and when you're done playing, you know, there's a place for you within the Montreal Canadiens organization. When you look at the landscape right now, and maybe it's players that are, you know, winding down their career right now, or players that have already wound down and, you know, could probably, you know, help an NHL team. I guess maybe I'm asking you to lobby for people that you know here. Who else should we keep our eyes on, do you think?
Oh, man, I think if you look at, you know, I think you could just go down, like whether it's Team USA's most recent Olympic roster or the last couple, or Hockey Canada's most recent Olympic roster. I mean, those are, to me, women that, for the most part, I would go to bat for every single one of them. I know, one, they've played, thought, and executed the game at an elite level for an extended period of time. And then, quite frankly, just on the women's side, the level of commitment and passion and willingness you have to have to stick it out in that game, based on, you know, minimal platforms, minimal resources, you know, people your whole life telling you, all of us growing up, you know, it'll never work, you'll never make it as a woman in this game. So, you know, that level. And what all those women have had to fight through for a long time. And then not to mention, as an elite athlete, what you learn about teamwork and, you know, leadership and all these other off-ice transferable skills that are important in any of these roles as well, communication skills, those types of things. I think you could go down all of those rosters and find someone that would help an NHL organization immensely.
There's a perseverance that just about everybody has on the women's side. I think to your point about saying, you know, at every step of the way, you know, girls being told you can't do this, you're wasting your time, and to persevere through all that when every hurdle has been placed in front of you and you still jump over. Like, these are, like, I always look at this, Megan, and I say, these are the things we're supposed to respect and admire about athletes, and the women's side are doing it on a consistent basis, and it probably doesn't get the attention that it deserves.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great word, you know, perseverance. And I think perseverance and going through things, that breeds excellence and breeds champions. And so I'm excited, like I said, to continue in any capacity that I can, knowing so many of those women, to help create those pipelines, to help be a mentor, to help fight for putting women's names on lists for hiring and things like that. And But, you know, to your point at the beginning of this conversation, like, we're just scratching the surface when it comes to the impact that strong female leadership can have in the National Hockey League.
Well, the Devils have a good one in you. Listen, the New Jersey Devils have, you know, with this ownership group, always prided themselves on trying to be, you know, the smartest team in the NHL. And this is a real intelligent move by them naming you the director of player development. Megan, best of luck in the new role and best of luck at the upcoming NHL draft where the Devils, no pressure here, will select number two. Good luck, Megan. Thanks so much for this. Enjoy the new position.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Megan Duggan, as the Director of Player Development for the New Jersey Devils. That announcement made by Devils Executive VP and General Manager Tom Fitzgerald. A really accomplished and super skilled hockey player. I don't even know how many world championships she won. It is multiple world championships. Won Olympic gold as the captain of Team USA at Pyeongchang. Played at Wisconsin, national champion, I believe, three times. Won the Clarkson Cup. Played in the NWHL. Played in the CWHL. Real great player, real smart person too, is going to make a wonderful director for player development for the New Jersey Devils. And good on the New Jersey Devils for recognizing what they have in Megan Duggan. And there are more still to come. I think that this is going to be another summer where we see more female hires around the NHL and maybe even in the NHL itself. Not just focusing on the club teams, but also the league as well. Thanks to Megan Duggan for stopping by the program today. Thanks to all of our guests. Corey Lavalette from the North State Journal catching us up on what's next for the Carolina Hurricanes. Mark Mosier, like the rest of us, are pretty excited about Game 1 tonight. The Avalanche play-by-play voice stopped by. It is the Avs and the Oilers tonight. Game 1, 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock puck drop. Those times Eastern. Brian Engblom getting us set for tomorrow's Game 1, the Eastern Conference Final, the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Brian, the analyst, longtime analyst for the Tampa Bay Lightning on television. And Elliot Friedman catching us up on what's next for the Hurricanes and his thoughts on what we saw last night. Chris Kreider, Igor Shesterkin, Mika Zibanejad winning a Game 7. And their reward? The defending two-time Stanley Cup champions. Enjoy that. Tonight, enjoy this. Hockey Central, 7:30 Eastern. Your host, Ron McLean, of the Puck Drops, the Oilers, and the Avs, just after 8.